some jobs added to the economy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We got news this morning from employer service company ADP. Private firms added about 32,000 jobs in April. We're going to have that coming up. But first, where's Wall Street? Well, you'd think that would make investors happy. Not so much right now. The S&P off about 1%, the NASDAQ about 1.5%. The Dow right now down 74 points at 10,852. European markets are down right now as well, an average of about 1%, maybe even 1.5% in some cases. Greece's financial aid still weighing on the minds of investors there. Asian shares mostly fell back today, although Chinese stocks managed a small gain. Richard DeKayser is president of Woodley Park Research. He's with us live from Washington this morning. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Let's talk about this ADP private jobs number, 32,000 up in April. This is just a private firm, though. Why is its reporting significant?
Well, one of the big economic numbers we all wait for every month is the employment report coming from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And this Friday, we get that number for the month of April. So analysts are always trying to figure out what actually happened. And the ADP report is the most reliable indicator. So it's a good indication of what's likely to happen. And the bottom line is we're growing jobs, not as much as we'd like, but we're at least going positive. And this particular gain would be the strongest gain in about a couple of years.
And that's private sector jobs, right? The ADP is private sector, but we also have government jobs that that perhaps have been created. Isn't the census still hiring people?
Well, that's right. Usually government jobs are not worth considering, but that's not the case now. We've got the decennial census going on, and April is going to be for sure a huge month with somewhere between 175,000 to 225,000 census jobs being added. And that'll get even bigger in May. So we should see a total increase somewhere in the vicinity of 200,000 or thereabouts when we get the final print on Friday. And that would be good news. That would be the best jobs gain we've seen previously in years.
Let's talk quickly about the oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. Do we even have a grasp, Richard, of the economic effects of all of that?
Not a very firm grasp, I'm afraid. There's a lot of economic impacts and tourism, travel, of course, the real estate value of the land, and this thing economists call existence value, the beauty of the land itself. The last time anything came close to this was Exxon Valdez spill in 1989. That was smaller and in a less populated area. So unfortunately, and the spill hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to figure out in time.
Something that we're going to have to talk about for days and months to come, I'm sure. Richard DeKayser, thank you so much. We appreciate it. In terms of that spill, crews are trying to cap the oil spill that's gushing crude outward for miles upon miles in the Gulf of Mexico. Some of it's already reached the Louisiana shore. All the while, the impact of the spill has made its way now to Capitol Hill. Marketplace's Brett Neely joins us live from our Washington bureau. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Steve.
We know what the spill is doing to the environment. What's it doing to politics?
Well, there was a climate bill in the Senate. It hasn't actually been introduced yet, but it was a fragile compromise. Everything about what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico may put this bill in danger.
And so it's going to put the climate change bill in danger. This is an oil spill that may wreck the chance of a bill that would cut oil use. How did that happen, Brett?
Well, after this spill, some Senate Democrats said there's no way they can support more drilling, which is one of the key measures of the climate bill. And some have even threatened a filibuster if the bill does include more offshore drilling. I got off the phone a little while ago with Dan Weiss, who's a climate expert at the liberal think tank, the Center for American Progress. He's against more offshore drilling, and he says support for drilling is going to fade as this bill gets worse.
The BP oil disaster means that people ought to rip up their playbooks because we're in a different environment now.
But many Republicans say that without offshore drilling, the bill is dead on arrival.
So, Brett, what happens if there's no climate bill this year then?
Well, I mean, a lot of companies are really looking for predictability. They just want to know what the environment's going to be like. And if they don't have a bill, it's going to be really hard for them to plan major investments like factories or power plants.
Marketplace's Brett Neely reporting from Washington. Brett, thanks.
Thank you.
listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, May 5th, 2010, at marketplace.org. British voters see and hear last-minute campaign pitches today. Tomorrow is Election Day in the UK. A new prime minister could be named. Besides new political leadership, the election will also bring in an era of new financial speculation. For the first time in history, British investors will be allowed to trade on the country's election results immediately after the polls close. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
The main futures market in London will be open for business at 1 a.m. on Friday morning. That's 7 hours earlier than usual. The idea is to give traders time to absorb the results from what is shaping up to be a knife-edge election. Stephen Lewis is with Monument Securities.
This is an unprecedented decision, but the election is expected to generate a lot of business one way or the other because so much hangs on the result.
He says investors will be reassured by a decisive win for the Conservatives. They've pledged to start cutting Britain's massive budget deficit immediately. Lewis says investors would be spooked by any other result. That could hit the pound and make it harder for the government to borrow. Some analysts say Britain could then become a Greek-style target for speculators. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The state of Ohio has an unemployment rate of 11%, but voters there have just okayed a ballot issue that they think could lower it. Reporter Bill Cohen has the story.
For the last 5 years, Ohio's government has borrowed $500 million and funneled it to emerging high-tech businesses that seem to be on the verge of taking breakthroughs in the lab and applying them to new products. An independent study showed the Third Frontier program had helped create more than 50,000 new jobs. Using that as a sales pitch, backers of the program have now convinced Ohio voters to renew it for another 4 years. That way, Ohio can borrow another $700 million. Ohio Development Director Lisa Pat McDaniel says a who's who of movers and shakers endorsed the campaign.
Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, everybody backing it because there's nothing partisan about good jobs for Ohioans.
The only critics were free market economists and activists in the Tea Party movement, but they never mounted an organized Vote No campaign. In Columbus, I'm Bill Cohen for Marketplace.
Every year, New York University's Stern School of Business gives out $175,000. It's prize money that goes to the best business plans. This year, the winners are creators of a website that aim to sell high fashion at low prices. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports they're catching on to a fast-growing trend.
Melanie Moore and Suzanne Greenfield are just 25 years old. They met while they were interns on the capital markets desk at Merrill Lynch. Now they're launching a handbag and accessory auction site called To Vie For, expected to be up and running in June. Here's co-founder Melanie Moore.
We got the idea for To Vie For by combining the kind of best concepts of two very different but highly successful e-commerce businesses.
Those businesses being Gilt Group and Swoopo. Gilt offers designer clothes at a discount through sales that are only open for a short time. Swoopo is a fee-based auction site. As Moore's co-founder Suzanne Greenfield explains, the way forward in online shopping is all about the fun.
People talk about how exciting it is, and they move their lunch meetings just to make sure they can log on to the sale. So with our business model, we're kind of playing on that aspect that women love. Women get really excited. It's about the chase. It's about the game.
Greenfield says To Vie For won't require a membership, as Gilt does, but it will charge users a small fee to participate in auctions. Call it eBay 2.0, says retail analyst Patty Edwards with Storehouse Partners.
When you're looking at retail, there are three things. It's having the right item at the right price with the right shopping experience.
And Edwards says as more and more retail shoppers go online for their purchases, the experience part of that equation is becoming more important. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Caviar usually makes people think of luxury and of Russia, which is famous for the sturgeon that produce those tiny, salty eggs. But it's increasingly hard to raise sturgeon in Russia. And now other countries are trying to make a name in the caviar trade, such as the South American nation of Uruguay. Annie Murphy reports.
About 25 years ago, Walter Alcalde was running a shipping business in the port of Montevideo. He had friends from all over the world, and one night, as he dined with some Russian sailors and merchants, he had a big idea. His son Javier tells the story.
It came about while they were eating caviar on the ships. According to some of the Russians, government scientists had done a study and figured out that Uruguay and Australia had the special conditions needed to raise sturgeon for caviar.
Walter Alcalde started learning how to produce caviar. 2 decades later, his son Javier runs the family caviar business, Rio Negro Caviar. It currently exports 5 tons of caviar each year to places like the U.S., France, and Russia. And the caviar even sells here in Uruguay. Alvaro Verderosa is the executive chef at Arcadia, a 5-star restaurant in downtown Montevideo. He's been serving Rio Negro caviar for the past 5 years.
When people see it on the menu, they're surprised that Uruguay produces caviar, and then they try it, and they're surprised that it's so good. Last year, I was in a competition in Lyon, France, and they did a taste test with 7 varieties of caviar, and they found the Uruguayan caviar to be of very high quality.
Uruguay's climate is part of the secret to its caviar. Elena Rogova moved here with her husband from Russia 12 years ago to help raise sturgeon for Rio Negro caviar. She says this part of Uruguay looks and feels just like the region of Russia where she's from, near the Caspian Sea and Volga River, and the traditional home of caviar. But there's one crucial difference.
There's very little pollution, while in Russia there's a lot of industry, and the environment is too contaminated for raising sturgeon.
The next challenge for Uruguay is getting its own people to eat more caviar. Like neighboring Argentina, this is a red meat nation. And not just that, Uruguayan caviar costs about $2,000 a pound. This is Annie Murphy for Marketplace.
The global financial crisis certainly hit some parts of the world harder than others. Many countries in Africa appear to be well on the way to recovery, and business and political leaders are meeting there today. For Marketplace, the BBC's Andrew Walker reports from Tanzania.
The banking crisis might have started on Wall Street, but eventually the economic fallout reached Africa. Nilesh Bhatt is the owner of African Pride. He makes cotton fabrics printed with traditional African designs. When tourists stopped visiting Tanzania, his customers had less money to spend on his clothes.
They first chose their food, basic necessities like food and shelter instead of clothes.